to him a little bit about football. He is Tiki Barber, former Giants running back, WFAN Afternoon Drive, and of course, CBS Sports. He's on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. As always, Tiki, thank you so much for joining us. How are you,
Tiki?
How are you doing?
Pleasure, boys. I'm doing great. How are you all?
We're good. I mean, Guardians got in the playoffs yesterday, so, I mean, we're feeling good about that.
We live in Cleveland, Ohio. They're making playoffs. The sun's out. Man, we're over the moon.
How much champagne did you all drink afterwards? As a team, because you saw what happened with the Yankees. They had a champagne party after they clinched the day before, went out all night, and then lost the next day because they had a day game.
That's like playing basketball in Miami. It's pretty much a written, you know, you're losing the next day, right? I mean, we all know that. Tiki, let me ask you this. I just think it's interesting because the Guardians still have a chance to win the Central. Do you do champagne again?
No, absolutely not.
They're going to do champagne again. That's the word on the street.
God, come on. I had this issue with the Yankees, and they went out. Jazz Chisholm, who we love, since he got traded from the Miami Marlins, is doing Instagram Live videos basically saying, yeah, we out here partying. I don't give a bleep that we have a day game tomorrow. And I said, look, if the only way I'm forgiving him for this is if he hits a home run. He hit a damn home run. So I got to forgive him, but they lost the game. So it's frustrating. But you're right. There's so much more to play for. The number one overall seed is so important in baseball, especially for the Yankees, because as we've seen over the years, when they play on the road, they struggle in the postseason. When they play at home, they actually are pretty much undefeated in most of the series that they have. They just haven't had a bunch of home series over the last, you know, 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, baseball's not scared to pull out the champagne, ever. Could you imagine,
no.
Like, if you won a wild card game, would you pull out the champagne after that?
No.
No.
Dude, when we won the NFC Championship game in 2000, I don't remember doing anything. I don't remember alcohol in the locker room. I remember a bunch of random dudes in the locker room, like, what are you doing here? Like, who are you? But I don't remember having, like, crazy parties, and we were going to the Super Bowl after that.
Well, you know, Tiki, it's an 162-game slog to get you there instead of 16 individual car crashes that you guys went through.
Yeah, I guess it's worth it. I guess I can get it.
I'm with you, Tiki. So we're on the same page. What are your thoughts on Browns Giants this weekend? And I mean, are the Giants what the record says they are? Are they really 0-2?
Yeah. And look, the first game we talked about it on our show. That really felt like a preseason game. It felt like nobody was on the same team. The Minnesota Vikings just went bonkers on us. Sam Darnold, who has been a journeyman, you know, after leaving the Jets, was 10 for 10, or I think actually 13 for 13 to start the game, which, you know, in some ways is not unexpected because our secondary is young here. It's, you know, Jason Pinnock, who's 27, is the vet, and he's a free agent. He came as a free agent a couple of years ago. So it's a young secondary. It's a new scheme under Shane Bowen. So it's a little bit learn as we go. And they look better in week two against the Commanders, but a frustrating loss in that game because we lost our kicker. The dynamic kickoff, he had a groin injury, kicked it off. The Commanders return it for a touchdown, ultimately gets called back, but in the chase down, he pulls his hamstring, and now we don't have a kicker. And so we missed all three extra points, and we become the first team in NFL regular season history, because it did happen in the postseason, to score three touchdowns, allow none, and lose the game. So that's the frustration that we're dealing with. So the record isn't really telling the full story because it's nuanced once you dig into it, but it's a little bit of frustration from a fan base that expected a little bit more, especially against some of the weaker teams on our schedule.
Former Giants running back Tiki Barber joining us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. All right, Tiki, can you buy enough Malik Nabor stock?
No. Not at all, because he's going to get targeted every other play. Last weekend, I think he had 18 of the 27 targets. And like, if teams are going to go play single high, if they're going to put a man look, it doesn't necessarily have to be man coverage, but if they're going to put a man look on Malik Nabor, the Giants are going to target him. And it's the best that they can do, because unlike a lot of teams and where they've started to go, There aren't tight end targets. We had no tight end targets last weekend. And we have some pretty good tight ends. They're just young. and not trustworthy yet. And so Malik Nabers is going to get all the burn. He dropped the pass at the end of the game, so he's still learning. If he had caught it, maybe they win that football game. But Malik Nabers is as advertised. He's a humble kid, despite some of his bravado that we all saw at the draft. And I think he's going to grow into one of those really good ones. LSU is becoming a factory, man. They're pumping out these wide receivers. So if you're in need of one, go look at LSU.
All right, and we heard about this. What, it was after the game last night, wasn't it? We're talking about this too high. I mean, this is like the blown-out story of the week about – defensive coverage and oh, it was Mel Kiper that said
Mel
last
Kiper
night.
Yeah, get up going off.
What are your thoughts on that? I don't know. To me, I think sometimes when it comes to fans on that, it might be a little too much in the weeds. But I know what we're talking about.
You know? Yeah, they don't understand. You know what I mean?
Right.
Fans don't get it, so you can't dig deeply into it. But the crux of it is, too high looks are generally are zone looks, and so there should be space to run the football. But they're so confusing nowadays, and they're always trying to disguise and, you know, confuse these young quarterbacks in the NFL. But I think what it's created, and this has been fun for me as a former running back, you've started to see teams truly commit to running the football. You've seen them get scheming to run the football, because it felt like for about, I don't know, 7 or 8 years, the run play was like a breather play. It's like, let me dial up as many pass, you know, concepts as I can, and then I'm going to run the football just so I can get to my next pass play. You know what I mean? And I think that now with Kyle Shanahan's tree starting to spread throughout the NFL, you're seeing schemed run plays, right? You see it in Miami. You see it down in New Orleans with the Saints, you know, with Clint Kubiak. You see it in Houston with Shane Waldron. I mean, not Shane Waldron, with Bobby Slowick. So there's a bunch of, like, really cool run schemes that we've seen early on in the season so far. And I love it. I think it's great.
All right, do you think this means that in the future running backs will be valued maybe like the way they should be? And it drives me nuts. The game I love, like, has great running backs in it. And we've gone so – the teams treat running backs like they're a dime a dozen. It drives me nuts.
Yeah. Well, I think it's because they're worried about the wear and the injury issues that are going to happen. And so in my era, I would get 400 touches, right? I'd get 350 carries and, you know, 40 or 50 receptions. Nowadays, running backs are lucky if they get 250 total touches.
Yeah.
And so I think the value has diminished, one, because of that, right? They're splitting the carries. But two, think about the easiest ways to score in any sport. It's just, it's to have the big play, right? Hit a home run, you know, get a 20 plus yard play. In fact, that quadruples your EPA, your expected points, you know, per attempt when you have a big play. And the best way to get big plays, or the easiest way to get plays, is to throw the ball. And so running backs who, you know, have this little tiny percentage of big plays, I want to say it's like 12%, just it doesn't add up for scoring. It's too hard to go first down, first down, first down, first down, first down, first down. Now we're in the red zone. Let's try to score. It's easier if you can do big plays. And there's really one running back, and he's not even playing right now because he's got so much wear and tear. He's on IR. And Christian McCaffrey, who can create big plays even in the run game. And that's the one guy who got paid, right? He's making $19 million a year. Everybody else is 14 and under. And it's probably trending lower. I think the fourth highest paid running back is Ramondre Stevenson, and he's making $8 million. I mean, I've been retired for 18 years. That's $2 million more than I was making. You know what I mean? So it hasn't advanced like every other position exponentially has grown, you know, financial worthwise.
It does say something about the Browns, though, to stick by Nick Chubb. I mean, it would have been easy to say.
100%.
You know, so I think that's – and Browns fans, I mean – Nick is absolutely loved here, and we're hoping that maybe we can see him in Week 5. But it does say something about the Browns franchise that the investment is still there, no matter how the rehab turns out for Nick Chubb. So, you know, there's one other story out there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I did see some of his off-season squatting videos.
Yeah,
dude is a monster. So it's worth hanging on to him, because I think when he comes back, he's going to be stronger than ever.
Tiki Barber joining us, former Giants running back, now doing afternoons with WFAN on the North Upstate Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. So week one of the Browns, Deshaun Watson came out, and the whole team in general, and it was, we'll call it poor.
Week two looked a little bit better. Offensive side, right. It seemed to click a little bit better. What are your thoughts watching the Browns offense this season?
Yeah, well, at least you got a W. I know that was an ugly-ish game against the Jags this past weekend. I think Trevor Lawrence he's just regressed. It just is what it is. But, you know, when I look at the Browns, I see a team that wants to run the ball. I heard the clip you guys played of Joel talking before I came on. Run the ball, lean on the defense, create opportunities that way so that they get worn out, and it gives you an advantage. I think week one was, again, I don't want to say it's like a preseason, but it felt like that. It felt like the Cowboys had a perfect game plan. They jumped on you early. You got out to a 20-3 lead at halftime, and it was just kind of cruising from then on for the Cowboys. And the Browns were skitterish, and then just couldn't ever find their footing. Week two felt better, right? There was a bunch of sustained drives. Early on they got points, and I think the one thing I worry about is all of the distraction around Deshaun Watson. I don't think it permeates the locker room, but it becomes a question that gets asked over and over and over and over again. And it's hard enough to focus on whoever you're game planning against. And now you got to throw in all this other stuff, which gets frustrating, even if it's not really a distraction in that locker room. Those are the things that need to get cleaned up. The other thing is there seems to be a little disconnect between Deshaun and Amari. His catch, I saw the catch percentage. It's the lowest in the league, under 30%. He's a difference maker, and you got to find ways to create space for him so that he can get involved early and do what he does, right? He's paid to be one of these elite players, and he's not, the first couple of weeks, he hasn't been that.
What do you attribute that to, Tiki? I mean, I don't know, maybe from your experience, maybe Eli had an issue getting into Amari Toomer at some point or another. If it's something along those lines, like, is it just like a hiccup between two guys, or is it contract obligations? Like,
no,
what do you think, man?
I think it's just a hiccup between two guys, because you know that they're both talented. You know that they both have the skill to do it. I think your coordinator can help you out, right? He can make it easier for them. Ken Dorsey, he can make it easier to just scheme things, right? Just get in his hands, make him feel comfortable and used and utilized. And that it grows upon itself, right? When you know that you're a big part of what an offense is trying to do. Right now, it doesn't feel like Amari Cooper is part of what the Browns are trying to do. And I know that's not the case, but that's just what it looks like on film.
Just give me your perspective just from being in an NFL offense when you have a team where the head coach is calling the plays, but the offensive coordinator is there. Like, right. I think it'd be tough to be an offensive coordinator and not be able to call the plays, but I always laugh about this.
It is.
You know, Jim Trussell once said, "Hey, if I'm not calling the plays, what am I doing as a head coach?" And I was like, think about that when he says that. And what's it like to be in that running back in that scenario?
Yeah. So it's interesting because I had it both, and it was all kind of in the same year when Jim Fossil was our head coach and Sean Payton was our offensive coordinator after 2001, I believe it was. He kind of fired Sean in the middle of the season. It wasn't a big story because, social media didn't take it and run with it, but he took back the play calling duties. And it felt good, but so different to have the head coach who's dealing with so many other things that you can't sit, stop, and have a conversation with them. You know what I mean? So you come to the sideline, you've run a series or whatever it may be, and you usually get over the sideline, you talk to the play call, and you're like, look, they're trying to do this to us. All right, they're doing X, Y, and Z, and it immediately translates into a new play call. But with a head coach, he's worried, still watching, obviously, down a distance for the defense. You know, do I need to call, throw a challenge flag? Like, all of these in-game management things just get, it's just one person removed from the decision maker. So it gets a little bit wonky at times, but Kevin Stefanski has been doing it for, 3 years now. So they should be used to it. And I think the new addition of Ken Dorsey maybe adds a complication, but I don't think it's something that's terminal in any way.
How tough is it as a player, Tiki, to overhaul an offensive scheme the way the Browns have? I mean, they've gone from the Shanahan-Kubiak system over to more of a spread offense with Ken Dorsey. How tough is that?
Right. It's really tough because the language is different a little bit, but it's also the rules that you've spent, you know, 2 or 3 years learning are now also different. And especially when you get teams that are going to want to pressure you. You know, you think back to those, you remember The Greatest Show on Turf, right?
Mm-hmm.
With
yeah.
Kurt Warner and all those guys. If someone was going to bring pressure, their rule was don't block it. We're not adjusting. We're not canning the play, you know, changing the play. We're going to beat it, right? I know as a quarterback and you know as a receiver, when you get pressure, when that third guy or second unblocked guy comes from your side, you're breaking off your route, the ball's going to come out, and you're going to get it completed. But when you have these new systems, especially when they're more spread, as a quarterback, you have to fix it, right? You're not going to stand up there and just get hit in the mouth or trust that one or two receivers are going to know exactly what to do. So what you see happening at the line of scrimmage, and you guys see this, watch the game, you'll see him. When a certain look comes, he'll stand up, he'll, you know, throw an audible, he'll can it, he'll reverse the play. He's trying to fix it. He's trying to fix the protection so that he has time to let the play that's called develop and get a completion. It's just a new set of rules which take some time to get comfortable in. That's the biggest difference when a system changes from what it was to, I think, what it is now when it's more spread.
All right, Tiki, as always, I got to ask you one last question because you were concerned about the Yankees. When they clinch, they party hardy. What about your Virginia Cavaliers or Coastal Carolina? And let's be honest, I mean, Myrtle Beach is a fun place to hang out. Could they get lulled in this weekend?
They're not partying. What are you talking about? I mean,
have you been to Coastal Carolina? We drove through there with my son a couple. Oh, my God. Tiki, one's going to class down there. I asked the kid in the bookshop because we were looking at it, and I'm like, hey, what's it like to go to school here? And he was like, you know what it's like? It's like going to class and being on vacation every day.
Right. That's got to be nice. Well, it's a must win for UVA. They had a bad loss last weekend, a big come from behind win the weekend before against Wake Forest. But I like our quarterback. Calandre, I think he's young. He makes some dumb decisions here and there, but I trust him. I trust that he's part of what could be a good future for Tony down there. You know, in his third year, I think this is now.
I think so.
For Tony Elliott, I think it's his third year. It's, you know, really it's recruiting. It's about getting the best players and then holding on to those players, because you guys know with NIL, it's basically recruiting your own team as well as all the kids that are coming in as freshmen every single year. Otherwise, they transfer, because now it's, you know, it's free to transfer.
Yeah, Virginia to me is like one of those underrated campuses, because we've been there a couple times. We've gone through there.
Best, dude.
It's awesome.
Dude, we're sneaky party.
We're
not like Coastal Carolina. We're in your face party, but we're a sneaky party school.
As long as you can find a parking spot downtown, you're good to go.
No, it's impossible.
It's bad. Tiki, thank you. We always love talking to you. Anytime you got a home here in Cleveland with us, you know that, man.
Thanks, man.
Appreciate you, boys.
Thank you, Tiki.
Take care of yourself.
All right, Tiki Barber. Bye. Nice enough to join us on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Let's talk a little bit about what Tiki had to say, especially when we were breaking down the offenses. So 216-474-0092. Brian Anderson will join us at high noon. Tim May, Letterman Rowe, and Kevin Stefanski's press conference at 1:20. In fact, I'll kind of tease just one of these things here. I'm looking really, really looking forward to Sunday. You're going to want to be in your seats at halftime. I don't know who's playing. We haven't heard yet. I heard they might announce it today. You know what they're doing at halftime?
No, what are they doing?
Flag football game with alumni.
No.
That's the word on the street, man. Yes.
Oh.
How many ambulances do they need?
I was just going to say, this is a bad idea. This is like, I'll never forget.
Oh, no, are you kidding? I'm just wondering who they're bringing back. Who's going to play?
Oh, no. That's a bad idea. These guys are only wired one way.
Oh, come on. They're playing against their old teammates. They'll have fun.
These guys are only wired one way, man. And the human body can't move like it used to. Your brain can move like it used to. The body doesn't move like it used to.
I don't think Bernie's in great shape right now, but I don't think they would put. Maybe they put him out there for one pass.
I'll never forget. I was talking with the former trainer of where I coach basketball. Well, I used to coach basketball, coach track now.
Yeah.
And I'll never forget him looking at me and going, the scariest part of my job isn't the athletes. The scariest part of my job are when the coaches go, all right, I'm hopping in this play. He's like, that's when I'm immediately on high alert. He's like, that's torn ACL, torn Achilles, pulled hammy. Like, that is just golden for that.
Yeah, it's like I watched some of these hockey practices where coaches think it's a good idea to hop out without a helmet on. I thought that same way until 2000 when I saw a puck hit me in the back of the head while I was wearing a baseball cap. Never again. I actually, the guy I was coaching with was my high school coach, right?
Right.
And so this, I'm standing, I don't know why, I was trying to jump in front of the net, and I'm like, shoot, the kid had the puck out at the blue line. And I'm like, shoot. And so he does, and all of a sudden I see the puck rising, and I'm like, oh my God, it's coming from my head. And so I duck out of the way, and you have a little bone right here, you know, in the back of your head. It just nicked me. I mean, I don't even think the puck, it didn't hit me square.
Ooh.
It just nicked me. And the next thing I know, man, I'm like, I go down on one knee, and I look at my coach, John Malloy, who a lot of people know, and I'm coaching with him at this time, right? And I go down on one knee, and I'm kind of hanging onto my stick, and he looks at me, and he goes, are you okay? I go, yeah, of course I'm okay. And I go, why? And he goes, well, you just got hit with a puck. And I go, okay, it doesn't bother me. You're not taking me out of the game. And he looked at me like I was crazy, because I was at the time.
Of course.
And he goes, what are you talking about? I go, you're not taking me out of this game. I'm not going to the bench. And he goes, Andy, hey, you coach with me now. You don't play for me anymore. And I was like, oh, yeah, you're right. And then I got up, and I got really dizzy, and I ended up going back over to the bench. And I was just like, and I won't go anywhere near the ice now without a helmet on. So
I'm sorry to hear that.
That's okay. No, you have to deal with it every day because have to talk to me now. Like when I can't remember somebody's name, that's why.
Oh, yeah, because I don't have the same exact problem often.
True. Good point. All right, let's go back and talk a little bit about what Tiki had to say, because I thought he had some really interesting stuff. In particular, I don't know, you caught something that you really were into.
So he brought up the whole too high thing, which has been finding its way all over the place. And for those of you who don't know what that means, like it's not that complicated. It's basically an idea of the modern defense. The best way to put it is two safeties are sitting on top. The idea is to put a dome on the offense.
It's the deepest part of the field, right? The deepest part of the field.
They're basically just putting a dome, and they're saying, you are not going to hit anything past 20 yards on us. We are putting just a roof right on top of your offense. And the whole idea was to stop Patrick Mahomes and to stop Mike McDaniel and to stop these Shanahan offenses from taking these shots.
Wow.
Don't change the rules. Run the damn ball.
Yeah.
Tiki Barber put it better than anybody else. Just run the ball. That's what they want you to do. Those safeties are so far back. Run the ball. Run the ball. Because those two safeties being 10 yards down the field or even further, they got to come all the way up. So if you bust that hole, that's how you beat this system. You run the ball. Run the ball. Run the ball. Run the ball. Or have Aaron Rodgers, who had this to say on the matter after the game. And what did Aaron Rodgers do last night? He found the guys who are 10 yards down the field because he's Aaron Rodgers and he's the most patient quarterback we've ever seen. And he said, oh, you're going to put the dome on? Fine. I'll nickel and dime you down the field. Good luck stopping me now.
I don't know. Jabril Peppers is still standing like in the Muni lot making coverage on plays at the west end of the stadium.
Point.
I mean, does anyone want to tell him the game's over? He's been standing out there for like 7 or 8 years right now. So. All right, we've got Brian Anman up at high noon. Tim May will join us at 1 o'clock from Glenn Monroe. You know what to do at 1:40. It's quick predict. So all these great things coming up. Baskin and Phelps, we're going to talk about some things concerning the Browns. Not really a concern, just things going on the outside. We'll do that next. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan. For our kids, it's the Stay in the Game Attendance Network. Renee Harvey, nice enough to join us. She's a friend of the show, always has been. Browns Vice President, Executive Director of the Cleveland Browns Foundation. Right now, she's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. Hi, Renee. Always a pleasure to have you on the air. How are you?
Hello, Renee.
Hi. Doing great. Good to be with you today.
Always awesome to talk to you. Talk to me about Stay in the Game, the Attendance Network, and how important it is for the kids of Northeast Ohio.
It is. I appreciate the opportunity. So really excited. We're in our fifth year of the initiative now statewide. We're up to 130 districts across the state. That's about 420,000 students, but really partnering with a number of school districts to really rally support around students, driving home the importance of attending school every single day. Really need to make sure that our attendance rates are improving across the state. We know that obviously for students who miss school regularly, it impacts their learning, and we have a lot of recovery coming out of COVID. But this initiative is really making a difference. We are seeing higher rates of improvement for chronic absenteeism rates with our partner districts than the state average. So this is really working, really excited, and Sunday gives us a nice opportunity to really showcase some of the great work that our educators, our partner school districts, and a lot of our students are doing in terms of really doing what they need to attend school regularly.
Yeah, so Renee, this is the big Stay in the Game weekend. What does that all entail for Browns fans who are showing up for the Stay in the Game initiative?
Yeah, I appreciate that. So we do a lot of things, obviously, leading into game day, a lot of player visits. Our Chomps mascot has been on a crazy tour going to a number of schools, really celebrating students for making the effort to get to school every day, really driving that improvement. We've done a number of job shadowing opportunities for our high school students to give them exposure to different careers that they might not know about within sports. Some of those took place leading into game day. We'll have a couple of them on Sunday. One will be a host. Another will be a PA announcer. We'll have educators forming a gauntlet, welcoming the team to the field. We'll have flag holders, a kickoff kid, color guard, and a whole lot of other fun elements throughout the game, but really just a chance to celebrate and showcase all the hard work that our educators and students and families put towards getting to school every day.
Renee, I was just doing a little bit of reading. I know we've talked about this before, but I was kind of blown away by this fact that students who miss two or more days in September are significantly more likely to be chronically absent for the entire year. That's unbelievable. And, you know, to talk about that, and then how important was it for the Browns to get involved in this, especially coming out of the pandemic where it was easy to stay home and do school in your pajamas and look at a computer?
Yeah, Andy, you bring up a lot of good points. I think the first one around, you know, 2 days in September, it's really important that our students are getting that strong start at the beginning of the new school year. We know that really carries through the rest of the school year. And then in terms of really making sure that, you know, as you mentioned, COVID, our numbers have increased significantly. When we launched this, we actually launched before COVID. The chronic absence rate across the state was at 16.7%. We actually said by 2030 at that time we wanted to reduce by 50%. We wanted to get to below 10%. So obviously we've gone in the wrong direction due to the pandemic, and we have a ton of recovery to do, but we have 2 years in a row where we're finally starting to see a decrease. But as you mentioned, we really need to get back to a place where we're stressing the importance as parents, as caregivers, that our students need to be in school every day. We know it has a big impact. It affects that next day when you go in and you don't know what's happening. We need our students there so they can be connected to supports and services and receive, you know, any type of resources that the schools can put them in touch with, the social emotional learning and all of those other ancillary pieces that are so critical for our students to thrive.
Renee, what's the reaction of the kids when they see the players? And, you know, we talk a lot about a lot of things when it comes to football, but I mean, I believe that the vast majority of these players enjoy doing these appearances. They know they've got an opportunity to give back to these kids and make a difference in their lives. Can you just tell me about the experience when the guys go there, and then, you know, what the guys are saying to you about the experience when they go?
Yeah, I appreciate that question. You know, Mel Hurst is our current Stay in the Game ambassador, and he, like many of the other guys on the team, are always willing to do the visits, go out and visit with students, or whether it's a variety of other community initiatives that we have going on. I think, you know, they really appreciate and understand the opportunity that's been afforded to them, but also understand that it has taken a village, I'm sure, to get them to the place they are. And so for them to be in a position to give back and really show the students in our, you know, for our program, that they see the effort, they see the hard work, it goes so far for the students and the teachers that they're interfacing with. And I think the players oftentimes really enjoy the experience as well and get re-energized coming out of those visits as well.
I don't blame him, Renee. I'm staring at what Cedric Tillman did over the weekend here at, or I should say during the week at Shorewood Elementary School. And I mean, where in the heck was this when I was in school? I mean, they're running drills. They're having a good old time. Like, man, my gym class was run the mile and then get some water and then huff and puff until you have your breath back to go to algebra.
He's still trying to climb the rope.
Exactly. This is outstanding. When you put these things together, how much are the players involved to put these activities together for the kids?
Well, we have a good team behind the scenes. We want to save their time for interacting with the kids, but we do get some good ideas from them. We really try to change up what we do. We've done, you know, one of our players has done been a principal for a day. We've done, as you mentioned, these gym class takeovers. We really want to make it a celebration. We've done minute to win it assemblies and, you know, really try to make sure that we're delivering the message, of course, when we go out, but really, again, want to acknowledge for many of the students and families that we're working with, it is not an easy task to get to school every day. A lot of the districts we're working in are in lower income communities, and a lot of the barriers that are keeping kids from school are associated with being in lower income communities. So we really want to make sure that we see that effort, acknowledge that effort, do what we can at the school level, at the district level, to offer those supports and plug them into, again, those resources that can hopefully get them through to whatever it is that they want to do and what they want to be.
Yeah, and the other part, too, I think sometimes, and like I'm just thinking about the players and them giving back, too, is that when these kids are in school, a lot of times this is the big time these kids are eating, too, to make sure that they're making sure they're getting meals and being able to do that. How will fans know to stay in the game this weekend when they go to the game this weekend?
So hopefully you'll see a lot of our players warming up, our football personnel along the sidelines and stay in the game shirts. Our 50-50 raffle, a significant part of the proceeds benefits stay in the game, so that's continually promoted and a great way for fans to support stay in the game. And then obviously a lot of those on-game or on-field elements, rather, that I mentioned, a lot of those pre-game in the first half, but really helping us celebrate, again, a number of districts from across Northeast Ohio. We have a ton of districts involved, and we have over 80 students and educators that will be part of the celebration with us.
All right, so, and if school districts are listening right now, or there are parents that said, hey, why isn't our school district involved in State of the Game? What can they do, Renee?
Yes, stayinthegame.org. We have every possible bit of information and steps to make sure that we can get additional districts in network. I think that exchange of ideas, and we do a lot of great things for the partnering school districts in terms of monthly webinars and capacity building and newsletters, and really, you know, a lot of our ideas come from the districts, and we try to share those out with other districts. We want to learn quickly and again, try to be as efficient as we possibly can for districts, because we know educators have a lot going on. So stayinthegame.org will have all of the information that they would need.
Renee, keep fighting the good fight. You're doing great work, and we appreciate that. But more than that, we appreciate what you're doing for the community. So thank you, Renee.
Appreciate it, Renee.
Thank you. Appreciate the support. Thank
you.
We'll
talk to you soon. Renee Harvey, she is the Browns Vice President, Executive Director of the Cleveland Browns Foundation, and Stay in the Game, the attendance network. If you want more information, just go to clevelandbrowns.com. I mean, really is a worthy cause, especially when you think about, you know, keeping these kids in school, making sure they stay in school, make sure they get educated, and little things. You know, I kept thinking, you know, just about how many of these kids are getting their only meals when they go to school, too. So it's more important maybe sometimes than just education that we're talking about, but really nothing's more important than education. All right, and of course, she was on the North Homestead Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline. When we come back, we'll talk to Brian Anderson. A lot of good stuff coming up. Tim May, 1 o'clock, Kevin Stefanski's press conference. All straight ahead right here. Baskin and Phelps with Dan Menigan.